Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. An 1150 crore rupee mispayment by DHFL on the 4th of June proved to be the debt market's worst fears coming true. What followed was a ratings downgrade and markdowns across mutual funds holding DHFL debt. While the company has now made this payment in the promised time frame, debt investors are still nursing losses. So what is the way forward in the world of fixed income mutual funds? How much longer will this default storm rage? What should you do if you happen to be in one of the affected funds? This week, we answer some of these very important questions, putting the spotlight on the state of the fixed income market. My guests are Kausar Belapurkar, Director of Fund Research at Morningstar India, and Raghavendra Nath, MD of Ladder Up Wealth Management. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining in and appreciate you taking out the time to be on the show. Now, it's obviously troubling times for a lot of investors out there. Specifically, first-timer investors, Kausar, who had just made this shift from fixed deposits to debt mutual funds because all the headlines are so negative. Your first impressions and first thoughts on what transpired over the last 5-10 days?
Right. So, you know, this is something that, you know, we've been talking about for the last, you know, since the IFS sort of...
Actually, September last year.
And there's been a lot of negative news that's, you know, that's been kind of flowing in. But my advice to investors, you know, just quickly start with is that, you know, you need to kind of just step back a little from all this negative news and really think about it rationally. So, you know, if I take the example of even the DHFL, obviously they've run into a little bit of a liquidity crisis where, you know, there's this mismatch and, you know, they're not able to refinance some of the, you know, borrowings that they've done, which is largely what has caused the stress around it. And they're obviously, you know, really working hard in terms of selling down their loan books, selling out strategic sales or selling out, you know, subsidiaries. So they're trying to, you know, monetize parts of the assets to really, you know, make good their, you know, their liabilities. But obviously they missed this payment. And, you know, the valuation agencies, given all the negative news, and, you know, they've also been getting flack around, you know, were they too slow to act? Yeah. You know, they cut the valuations, which resulted in that huge markdown.
The D rating.
The valuation preceded the actual rating downgrade that happened. So if you see on 4th itself, the valuation metrics, put a heck out of 75 to 100% on the bonds. And that's really what precipitated the large mark-to-market sort of markdowns on the NAVs of the funds that were holding it. But, you know, like, you know, we've been saying that, you know, this is right now, it's a temporary phase and you really need to, you know, because like we said, they've been making those, you know, those efforts to monetize. And, you know, there's again positive news coming around the Aadhaar deal going through, them getting, and, you know, Avanse is kind of also, you know, almost, you know, close to being inked. So these things are going to be positive and they obviously have made good that, you know, that initial sort of payment that was due. And more importantly, what we also need to just keep a look on that, you know, there could be potential, you know, blips that can happen because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, maturities that are coming up. Even the rating agency, it's more about the liability mismatch that's there, that, you know, they have an X amount of cash that they foresee and, you know, the redemptions that are coming up are larger than that. So there could be a potential mismatch and that's why they've actually downgraded them.
They do have more payments coming up in June.
Yes,
from what
June to August is, you know, what I think is about 10,000 odd crores. And what CARE, you know, the rating agency on the NCD said there's about visibility on 6,000 crores. So there's about a 4,000 crore mismatch. So, I mean, that's obviously just playing the devil's advocate that there's still more to be done while they're doing it. But, you know, so it's not really a solvency sort of issue that's come up. You know, if you if you read all the notes, it's clearly saying that they have a clean loan book. There's, you know, the delinquency is, I mean, you know, there's not a problem with the assets they're holding.
It's just the asset liability mismatch. And this is a term that you would have been hearing increasingly over the past several weeks in financial media, including, of course, on CNBC TV 18, an ALM mismatch. Basically, when an NBFC or any kind of a lending institution borrows in the short term and ends up giving out those loans for the longer term, housing finance loans typically end up being 15 to 20 year duration. So that perhaps kind of aggravates the whole situation. But Mr. Nath, your thoughts on this, because this isn't the first domino to have fallen. As Kaustubh mentioned, we earlier went through a situation where a lot of the FMPs were sitting on losses because a different corporate group, and that time it was Z, because that's where payments weren't coming through, and suddenly the funds didn't have enough money to pay out, you know, at the time of, you know, the redemptions coming in. So what is the current state of affairs in the market?
I think this is not the only thing, and you had INFS and then Z, and now this, and probably there could be one or two more, you know, and... I think the credit risk as a category has, you know, kind of, as you were mentioning, there have been first-time investors who are coming in and, you know, putting their FD money into this. I think if the time horizon is right, if the people's expectation around the risk and return is right, probably then they should just hold on to the investments, because if you look at whether it's Z or it is DHFL or even ILNFS subsidiaries, most of them are good quality companies, you know. So there's nothing wrong with the companies. It's actually the situation, which is illiquidity in the marketplace, which is kind of hurting the companies as well as the funds, you know.
Sure. The point is that this is not just a problem that's contained in credit risk funds. Now, these are funds which take a call on slightly higher risk credit. So they typically invest in bonds or in paper that is AA rated or below AA rated. At least 65% of the holding ends up being in this kind of paper. So, Kaustubh, the point is that if you're getting in a credit risk fund, you should ideally know that you're taking a lot of risk and therefore be able to digest it. But my problem is this, when you look at the number of mutual funds that have taken markdowns, a lot of them were not from the typically from the credit risk category. I mean, just to name a few, of course, there are a lot of DHFL Primerica funds, which is, of course, the AMC, which hails from the same parentage. So they have had huge exposure, their medium-term fund, the DHFL Primerica floating rate fund, etc. But look at this, the Tata Corporate Bond Fund. We're talking about the Edelweiss Corporate Bond Fund, the Baroda Dynamic Bond Fund, the Edelweiss Short-Term Fund. So my question is that this exposure is spread well beyond credit risk funds.
Sure.
So then how do we wrap our arms around it?
So actually, a couple of points on this, right? So one is, you know, it's, I think, very important for investors to understand. You know, so when you say credit risk funds, you know, was it purely based, a decision based on looking at past returns? Or, you know, like we've been very, very actively saying that you need to look at the underlying credit, understand, because even within credit risk funds, you will have different dynamics. There'll be someone who will just be hugging that 65%, you know, AA. There'll be someone who will be more aggressively positioned, say, into a single A. Now, that is the stated or the way the manager's been managing it, but the investor, before getting into it, needs to understand that, you know, fund B is delivering a higher return because he's taking on additional credit risk. That's purely about the credit risk category. The other thing, you know, is some of the other categories, which are slightly more open-ended in terms of, you know, the definition when SEBI recategorized, you know, the whole mid of last year when they came into effect. So you look at categories like medium term, especially. It talks about duration, but nowhere does it talk about, you know, what credit buckets can you get into. And now that is one category where there's a lot of, you know, sort of polarized portfolios that you can find.
So it's a gray area. It could be a medium term fund, which means that typically it deals with the, you know, securities that mature in, I think, 3 to 5 years is
three to four years.
However, we don't know if they're AA rated, AAA rated, if they're sort of aggressive corporate paper that this fund is investing in. So therein lies the problem.
So you know, the thing is about identifying the right fund for you, and that's that's, you know, that's really the crux of the matter, because these are funds that have been managing them in that type. So they've been a pure AAA medium-term fund. And there are other funds that take on an element of credit risk. And there are quite a few of them. But it's not something that they started now. They've been doing that for a while. So it's a mandate they've been running for a time. You know, because you had to put one fund into a category, they kind of, you know, it fell into that bucket. But it's something they've been doing for a while. So investors need to understand that, you know, you can't just compare purely, you know, just looking at, okay, this fund's done XYZ over the last, exactly to my first point, right? And the third thing, and a very important thing, so if you see some of the securities that have come under stress are actually AAA rated bonds, right?
All of them are AAA rated, actually, you know, so ILNFS was AAA, DHFL was AAA, SL Group, most of the exposures were AA. So in fact, the lower rateds are actually doing well. It's the AAA which is creating the
Have it. That is a confusing world of fixed income. Now, gentlemen, we've established that obviously credit risk is a phenomena that spreads well beyond credit risk funds. The question is now, what happens to current investors? Mr. Nath, your first thoughts, because as I read out some of these, you know, fund exposures, For instance, the Edelweiss Corporate Bond Fund had almost a 15-16% exposure to some of this DHFL debt. Then there is the Tata Corporate Bond Fund. Some of the UTI fixed income funds, they also have exposure.
In fact, what has happened, if you look at, is that 10%, 15%, in fact, some of the funds have 20-30% also, you know, and the primary reason for that has been the shrinkage of the AUM over the last 6-7 months, you know, and so they may have had 5 or 6% exposure to DHFL, but because the fund size itself has come down
because
by 60-70%,
okay.
you know, that 5% suddenly becomes 25% or 30%, you know.
So now what do I do if I'm an investor and I wake up and realize that my fund has taken a 75-100% haircut?
Yeah.
On some of these holdings. NAV has been hit.
You just can't do anything, you know. In fact, but you should take heart from the fact that DHFL as an organization is a extremely, you know, well kind of well managed, or has been around for 2 or 3 decades or maybe more, has 1 lakh loans, home loans, so it's a retail book. So such kind of organizations cannot basically just vanish in thin air, okay? And therefore, sooner or later, the promoters will find a solution, which is probably will be lasting, and which will bring in the liquidity which is required to pay off these loans, you know? So I think people have to wait.
So no just, switch. I mean, don't think of immediately think of redeeming switch, your money and redeeming
you out. Have to be just be patient and find the promoters, because for let's say the promoters of the company, it is something a bolt from the blue, you know? They ran a company with a 1.5% delinquencies, you know, which is considered extremely good if you compare it with the PSU banks, which are 10%, 12% NPAs, you know.
And yet they're in the midst of this crisis. So obviously there's something that's gone wrong, or at least not right somewhere. But Kaustubh, again, the same question to you. What would you recommend? What should be done at this point? Should a switch be avoided? And also, some of the funds are now looking at this option of creating a side pocket, where you simply take out all the affected securities. So in this case, it's DHFL, and you put them in one basket on the side. And for instance, I think I saw Tata's talk about this. And then they're going to give units, equal units, on the side pocket and the main fund itself. So how does the side pocket work, and what should one do?
Sure. So, you know, I'm with Raghavendra on this, that, you know, there's absolutely no point in panicking and selling out right now. You've seen huge markdowns in the NAVs. You take money off the table right now, you're booking those losses for good. And, you know, like Mr. Nath rightly mentioned, that there's enough and more. We spoke about it, that DHFL is taking all those measures to do. And, you know, it's a company that's got such a good, clean portfolio. You know, we don't see any reason why there should be, it might take time. We spoke about that, you just got to be patient. And slowly but surely, the NAVs will start coming back. And as and when, you know, if there's a bond maturing and DHFL makes the payment, you'll actually realize the full proceeds back.
That actually brings me to a more immediate question. Now, for instance, the delay that happened where the 1150 crores was not paid, once this money comes in, which it has now, you know, come in, then what does that mean? I mean, the markdown can't suddenly be reversed, right?
Right.
So how does it play out, even though the money's come in now?
I'll actually break that up into two. So funds that were due that money, there are a bunch of funds that were due that money, and they receive the proceeds, the entire proceeds, they get the full value back, so that markdown kind of gets nullified.
Okay.
But funds that have longer dated bonds, you know, bonds that are maturing in 2020, 21 and beyond, the rating, the mark to market still exists because the rating has not been upgraded. And, you know, as far as we understand, it's not going to be a, you know, one swift rating upgrade because, you know, if you just read the text around it, obviously, I mean, while they've done this, there's still some way to go before, you know, you can say that all clear. There is going to be liquidity pressure still on them, and that's going to continue. So even if there are rating upgrades, they'll be much more gradual, which means that the mark-to-market backup will be a lot more gradual rather than a swift 75% cut that happened. So that's something I think investors should be prepared for. But like I said, directionally, if you're headed in the right direction, you shouldn't really worry and try to get out of the fund right now.
Now, what about these side pockets? How do they function?
So, you know, that's something that the regulator got in, you know, at the end of last year, given that, you know, we've seen some stress around it. And the whole focus is that, you know, because, and you know, we spoke about it, that some of these funds have had a huge shrinking of assets simply because, you know, there were redemptions. They couldn't sell out of these you know, the trouble bonds, because obviously no one would touch them, so they're to sell the good quality assets, and that's why those sizes have ballooned. So what SidePocket essentially lets you do is create a separate structure where you put the stressed asset into it, so at least the rest of the portfolio can continue to function as normal. So if there are redemptions or fresh purchases that need to be made, investors can continue to do that, because that's you know, that's part of the portfolio, that's all clean, which is you know, easily liquidable, or you know, you can add on to it.
But in terms of, just to understand the NAV calculation, now if a SidePocket is going to be created today in a fund which already took the markdown, so the NAV is already reflecting that drop, the SidePocket would then not give me back my original NAV.
No, it won't. It won't. It'll give you the value of what, you know, minus that bond.
Right.
So if DHFL is at 25%, it'll remove that 25%. That's my understanding. And it'll obviously value the rest of the bonds as they are.
Okay.
But you know, that...
So at least going forward, the overall fund will not suffer because of any of these issues.
The only risk in that, you know, and I think that's a reason why funds are shying away. In fact, and this has been, this came about, I think, 6 or 7 months back,
the SidePocket concept. SEBI approval, I think, sometime in 2018.
But there's the first fund which has done it, because the moment you take off that toxic exposure out, everybody will jump in and take away the rest of the money, you know. So funds will actually end up with a lot of losses.
Yes.
But with the toxic exposure, I don't have a choice, but I have to stay on.
Correct.
The moment the toxic exposure is taken out and put in a side pocket, the rest of the money I would like to take away immediately.
Even though
the other portfolio is clean, but my confidence as a retail investor is pretty low on the fund now, you know. So I said, I am getting my 75%, let me take it away. Let me see what happens to my 25.
Okay, that also brings me to the NCD holders. I mean, those who actually subscribe to the debentures, and I'm not talking about mutual fund investors right now. What are their options, Mr. Nath, if any at all?
Very little.
Okay.
I think because the thing is that if it's a secured NCD, they have a pari passu charge, which means that, you know, they are at par with all the other lenders, including banks and mutual funds. And if it's unsecured, in any case, they are subordinate to the senior guys. So they have very, very little options. Till that entire issue gets resolved completely, I don't think they have any option. I just hope that company like DHFL would very quickly find something, because for them, in the next 1 year, I think most of their debt will come up for renewals, you know, because I think they have 40,000 which they have already paid, and they'll have another 20-30,000 crore coming in, you know. So if they don't find a solution quickly, then it's a
wait and watch game. Now, a broader question, gentlemen, on the road ahead, and what debt mutual fund investors should really do. So, Kaustubh, to get back to the point, we've established that you need to be very aware and talk about credit risk when you're investing in a fund. A lot of people want to move to this category for the tax advantage, which means that you should pick a fund where you can park your money for 3 years. Now, which fund to pick so that you'll at least have a reasonable, you know, peaceful night's sleep?
Sure. So, you know, just kind of stepping back again from there, I think for every investor, you know, it's important to go back to the drawing board now. You know, this to me is like, you know, these things have happened, just go on to elaborate to the fact that, you know, credit risk exists. You know, we've enjoyed a good period that it was all hunky-dory, you were getting good returns, and investors probably at some point, you know, just ignored the facts of that. So I think that's very important, that you go back to the drawing board and assess that what level of risk are you ready to take, what's the trade-off that you can make. So I think that's the first thing they need to establish. If you think you're an aggressive investor, you're okay to stomach some of this, then, you know, yes, you can add on credit risk funds. But, you know, if something like this has completely spooked you and you think this is not for me, then, you know, there are categories of funds that you can get into. But again, with the caveat that you need to, you know, do a little more deep dive into studying the portfolios. Because like I said, that, you know, even if you get into a short-term fund or short-duration fund, you will have certain funds that do take on an element of credit risk. So you need to, you know, really focus on the underlying of the fund that you're getting to. You don't need to get into each individual security, but even a broader credit breakup will at least give you a reasonable amount of ballpark of what kind of credit risk it's taking. So I think that's very important to do. And, you know, categories like short duration, if you want to be like completely safe, then, you know, there's a banking in PSU sort of fund. There's a corporate bond fund where there's a credit mandate where you need to have at least 80% in AA+. Above security.
Is that the mandate for the corporate bond
funds?
That's
right.
80% of your portfolio needs to be in AA or plus.
Yeah.
Not that these ratings guarantee, as Mr. Nath was saying, not that they guarantee that there will not be any credit event. But same question to you, sir, as well.
I think people have to realize that anything other than government security is credit risk.
That's true.
And not
actually,
the credit risk funds, you know. And as we discussed a little while back, that both the DHFL as well as IL&FS were AAA, okay? So it's not about credit risk. I think investors, when they are coming into these funds, they need to realize that when a fund is going to take 40, 50 exposures, and then they have, let's say, seven funds, and those seven funds have 300 corporates, these accidents are bound to happen. They didn't happen for the last 5 or 6 years, it was their good fortune. You know, so I think if people go with the mindset that, okay, there'll be these accidents, one or two or three in, you know, over a 4 or 5 year horizon, and despite having those accidents, if I can make 7% or 8% after tax, then I'm in a good place.
So which are the funds? Mindset, so which are those funds you think you'll get this kind of a post-tax
return? So let's say credit risk is today sitting, for instance, in fact, we were discussing that today an average credit risk fund is sitting on a 14 to 15% YTM because of all these write-downs, you know? So actually, it for a risk taker, it's an excellent opportunity to invest into these credit risk funds, considering that most of the IL&FS subsidiaries will ultimately pay 70-80% back. DHFL, you may get 70-80-90%, maybe 100% back. And SL Group, you may get 70-80% back. So an investor can actually make a lot of money investing into these funds at these times, you know.
Okay, yeah, so that's for the high risk investors.
For a higher risk investor, you know, if he is looking to make 15%. But if it's a conservative investor, obviously you should diversify across corporate bond funds or, you know, income funds which had more of government securities or credit risk funds. If you're diversified, I think you're in a good zone. So most problems are happening because of lack of diversification.
So, okay, again, I go back to the same question, that for someone who wants to park money in fixed income funds to get a better than FD return for the next 3 years, then which category and what sort of funds? And also throw in a word here on FMPs, fixed maturity plans, because they also came under the cloud because of the Z issue.
Z, actually, in fact, if you look at FMPs as a category, is more suited to high net worth investors, because typically 400 or 500 crore money is collected and invested into 7 or 8 papers. So the concentration risk in an FMP is far higher than in any credit risk fund. You know, it's because of this write downs and shrinkage that the percentage exposures are looking abnormally high. But on an average, let's say 6 months back, the highest exposure would have been 3 to 4% in any corporate, you know, which is reasonable. So I think investors right now should basically, obviously in this kind of confusion, if you are a higher risk investor, go to credit risk. If you want to safety, I think corporate bond funds, which he mentioned, Kostum mentioned about, which are having 80 to 100% AAA rated exposure.
Any names that
I think
like all this,
every fund has one corporate bond fund and one credit risk fund, you know. Okay. So I think you can go with all the good names. I think mutual fund industry as a whole is very well managed that way.
Okay, Kostum, any final do's and don'ts, any tips as we wind down this conversation?
So just kind of reiterate the same fact that, you know, understand the risks that are coming in, and I think Raghavendra very nicely put it that, you know, there's credit risk in everything other than government securities, and you have to be cognizant of that. The the probability of that happening could vary across rating buckets. So that's where then you accordingly pick a fund which is, you know, less risky or more risky depending on the credit rating bucket. But incidents like this can happen, you know, so you have to be mentally prepared for it. But, you know, we think the industry as a whole is, I think, done a pretty good job in managing a lot of these risks. And, you know, we should tide over these difficult times.
Absolutely. Amen to that. And I think the one lesson that we've all learned, one point that I keep repeating to everybody that I meet, is that every time you have a conversation with your financial advisor, don't only talk about return, please also talk about risk. With those thoughts, we will draw this conversation to a close. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us and taking out the time. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's SurabhiUpadhyay. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.